WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this October 11th, 2016. That's right, it is Tuesday. We've got a jam-packed show for all of you out there. It's going to be a fun one, folks. Of course, as you know, each and every Tuesday, head coach of the Michigan State football team, Mark D'Antonio, holds his weekly press conference to address the upcoming matchup for the Spartan football team. He holds that presser at Spartan Stadium in the north end zone inside of the Tom and Loopy Media Center. And, of course, Mark D'Antonio is going through a lot right now, seeing as though this is a Spartan football team that has lost three straight games for the first time dating back to 2009. They have yet to win a Big Ten Conference game, and Mid-Michigan is in panic mode when discussing this team. So Mark D'Antonio addressed the podium, and he talked about sort of a few adjustments that his team plans on making this upcoming week. It is homecoming week against Northwestern. So you'll get to hear from Coach D himself, and yes, he will address the quarterback controversy that has been started due to, of course, Tyler O'Connor, senior quarterback. Tyler was benched on Saturday afternoon, against BYU in favor of Damian Terry. So you'll get to hear from Coach D on that. He also has a message to all the fans out there. So, also, we'll talk about the Detroit Lions topping the Philadelphia Eagles. We didn't get a chance to touch on that during yesterday's show because it was filled with just MSU football talk. And we will invite a true Michigan State football legend by the name of Bob Apiza, two-time All-American for the MSU football team back in 1965 and 66. And he is the director of a very insightful documentary entitled Men of Sparta, the history of the MSU football teams of the 60s. You do not want to miss that, folks. But hey, you know how we start this party. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. All right, folks, the number 14 Michigan State men's soccer team concludes its three-game homestand today at DeMartin Stadium at 4 p.m. when the Spartans take on number 17 Akron. The Spartans are currently 8-2-1 this year after a win against Western Michigan and a tie against Wisconsin. I don't understand ties in soccer. But, yeah, a tie against Wisconsin during the current homestand. The Zips are 6-3-1 overall and have gone 4-1-1 since their 2-2 start with wins against Oregon State. And then number 5, UC Santa Barbara. Now, Akron holds a 26-11-2 overall series over the Spartans. Now, after today, the Spartans will head to Penn State to play the Nittany Lions on Saturday, October 15th. That matchup is slated for a 7 p.m. start. All right, today also begins Michigan State Baseball's annual Green and White World Series. With fall practice concluding, the three-game intra-squad exhibition series will take place at McLane Stadium today, Thursday, October 13th, and Sunday, October 16th. Now, Tuesday and Thursday's games begin 4 p.m. Series finale on Sunday, set for 11 a.m. Sophomore left-hander Alex Troop will be the starting pitcher for the green team today, while freshie righty Mason Erla will get the start for the white team. Now, student assistant coach and newest member of the coaching staff, Jonathan Roof, will manage the green team, and volunteer assistant coach Jordan Kerr will manage the whites. Three-star fullback linebacker Chase Laster announced via Twitter Monday night that he has decommitted from the University of Michigan. Now, Laster called the decision heartbreaking and incredibly tough and believes it is in his best interest to reopen recruitment. Now, he committed to Michigan back in late March and is currently ranked as the number 353rd overall prospect by 247sports.com. He is also the sixth player to decommit from Michigan since August. Michigan currently has 16 commitments for its 2017 class. Central Michigan corner Amari Coleman was named the MAC West Division Defensive Player of the Week after his performance in CMU's 24-21 victory over Ball State on Saturday. Now, Coleman made four tackles, broke up three passes, made the game-clinching interception in the end zone with under 2 minutes remaining as the Chippewas snapped their two-game losing streak. This is the first time the new Lothrop High School alum has earned the honors. The Detroit Pistons lost, 86-81 to the San Antonio Spurs in preseason last night. Now, the Spurs' front line of Kawhi Leonard, LaMarcus Aldridge, and Paul Gasol combined for 41 points and 9 boards. Leonard added 20 points and 8 boards of his own. John Luer, who signed a 4-year, $42 million contract with the Pistons this offseason, stuffed the stat sheet. He had 14 points, 5 boards, and 5 assists. Luer was 6 of 13 from the field and 2 of 3 from 3-point range. Former MSU shooter Bryn Forbes scored 8 points in the fourth quarter, including 2 three-pointers for the Spurs. Good to see him on the basketball court. The Pistons returned to the court on Thursday, October 13th, as they traveled to Atlanta to take on Dwight Howard and the Hawks at 7:30 p.m. The Detroit Red Wings waive Team Moo Polkinen on Monday in a move that could enable the Wings to keep Andreas Athanasiou on the season-opening 23-man roster that must be set by 5 p.m. today. If Polkinen clears waivers, he can be assigned to the Grand Rapids Griffins. He had off-season shoulder surgery and was limited during training camp but played in a couple of preseason games. Polkinen has appeared in 70 NHL games and has picked up 11 goals and 20 points. All right, the MLB playoffs, folks. The Toronto Blue Jays will meet the Cleveland Indians in the ALCS as both teams swept their ALDS opponent. The Blue Jays sent the Rangers home after a walk-off on Sunday, and the Indians ended Big Poppy's farewell tour with a 4-3 victory in Boston last night. The Nats, that's right, Washington, lead the series against the L.A. Dodgers 2-1. Game 4 will be played tonight in L.A. at 5 p.m. The Dodgers will start Clayton Kershaw, who only has 3 days rest, and the Nats will battle with Joe Ross. Now, the San Fran Giants survived elimination against the Chicago Cubs last night after Joe Panic drove in the game-winning run in the 13th inning. Yes, I stayed up to try and watch that one, folks. That's why I'm a bit tired today, all right? I mean, after 3 a.m. is when that happened. I mean, that's crazy stuff, right? The Cubs lead the series 2-1 and will look to end the Giants' October magic tonight with the win in Game 4 at 8:30 p.m. in San Francisco. John Lackey will get the start for the Cubs, and Matt Moore will look to push the series to Game 5 for the Giants. And last but certainly not least, athletes have fired back at Donald Trump after he claimed some of his leaked comments about women last week were, quote, just locker room talk. L.A. Dodgers pitcher Brett Anderson, Kansas City Chiefs wide receiver Chris Conley, and Los Angeles Clippers guard Jamal Crawford were among some of the first to speak out. Even Detroit Lions wide receiver Golden Tate has spoken out and said that there are no excuse for what Trump said about women. Former NFL punter Chris Cluey. He penned an open letter on Vox.com to Trump and cited his own experience for what locker room talk actually is. All right, folks, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in, share your thoughts on anything that is on your sports noggin. You know that number, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and also even tweet us at Al Martin, WKAR, or at WKAR_sports. Without further ado, let's start the show.
Well, we've talked at length about those things. Those things will stay in-house, obviously. Obviously, we've got to practice this week. We've not practiced yet. So we're basing our decisions right now to bold all three of those guys based on Saturday's performance. And then we go from there. And I think Tyler O'Connor, I don't think that he played poorly. But there's got to be production. There's just got to be some production. So more production than what there is. And so that's, again, that's on everybody a little bit. That's on everybody, whether it's protection, routes, running the football, calls, execution by the quarterback, all these different things. So it's tough. It's, you know, some may think unfair. But at the same time, we have to look at the aspect, I think, as you would at any team or any major league team. You got to bring in a relief pitcher, whatever the case. There's nothing to say that one guy will quarterback the entire day. There's nothing to say that that person won't. We'll make that decision based on what we see this week. And, you know, there's a case can be made for every way to go. I don't like setting a guy down. He's a captain, that's for sure. And he's done a great job in that respect. And he was elected by his teammates. We don't select our captains here by coaches. I don't say, hey, you're a captain and you lead the football team. That's not how we've done it. So, you know, that's a tough situation. I've told all three quarterbacks they're off limits to media this week. I don't think you guys need to pepper them with questions and go through all that stuff with them. They need to get themselves ready to play a football game, all three of them. Maybe more importantly, they need to get themselves ready to practice.
And that is how we start this afternoon edition of WKAR's Current Sports. Ladies and gents, boys and girls, we are honored you've allowed us to be a part of your weekday afternoon. Again, it is Tuesday, a day after Columbus Day, a day after, I believe, what was Thanksgiving out in Canada, right? It was the Canadian Thanksgiving. How about that, right? Food for thought, literally. Yeah, Canada has had their Thanksgiving yesterday. I saw a few people on my Snapchat, actually, posting, you know, some delicacies as they indulged in celebration. A few of my frat brothers are actually in Canada celebrating that. And I'm pretty sure they will be in America for America's Thanksgiving. So they kind of get a double dose this year, I guess. But, happy Thanksgiving to those who are Canadian. And, yesterday was Columbus Day. And we had a fantastic show yesterday. One that was primarily filled with, of course, a ton of talk surrounded around the Michigan State football team. And justly so, right? Michigan State is reeling at three straight losses. The first time this program has lost three straight games dating all the way back to 2009. I was a sophomore here at Michigan State the last time that the Spartans have lost three straight games. And they haven't lost four straight games, I believe, since 2006. So they will be hoping to, of course, stop the bleeding this weekend, homecoming weekend, against Northwestern. That's a 3:30 p.m. kickoff time. A lot of people will be in town. And as I mentioned at the top of the hour, heck, I mean, to give you guys you guys are in store for a treat today. All right. Live in studio. We've been trying to get him on for quite some time, and he is finally here on the campus of Michigan State University. His name is Bob Apiza, and all of you old-school Spartan football fans certainly know that name because he was a two-time All-American for the MSU football team back in 1965 and 66. He hails from Honolulu, Hawaii. How about that, right? And actually has a documentary centered on the MSU football teams back in the 60s entitled Men of Sparta. But Bob Apiza is going to join us on the show. I'm really looking forward to his chat. And he's going to, of course, give his thoughts on what in the world is going wrong for this team. But there's going to be a lot of Michigan State football alum in the house. And, you know, you want to win on homecoming. You know, it's homecoming. Everyone's in a good mood, ideally, right? Because everybody's home on campus yet again, right? So many memories will be, you know, many people will be reminiscing, I should say, as they return to campus. And they want to see a Michigan State football win. Simple as that, folks. Especially when you evaluate the circumstances that are centered around the Spartans right now. So, you just heard Mark D'Antonio comment on his quarterback situation. And that is the sexiest part of this conversation, I guess you can say. That's the most dramatic part of this conversation when discussing MSU football right now, because it is the quarterback position. And we are talking about a man in Tyler O'Connor, who is a senior, who has waited so long for this moment, sitting behind, you know, a man like Connor Cook, who beat him out for that battle, And Connor Cook, of course, goes down. I always bring this up. He goes down as the most decorated quarterback in Michigan State football history. Did Tyler O'Connor abandon ship and say, you know what, I'm not going to get any playing time here until probably my senior year. I'm going to transfer. No. I respect Tyler because he waited. He waited patiently for this moment to be the head man in charge. And I feel bad for the guy because you wait all that time and you start the year like this. Tough stuff, right? Tough stuff. But at the end of the day, hey, life isn't fair. And that's why I love football. That's why I love sports in general, because life can teach you so many lessons in this game of life as well. Life isn't fair. You know, even when you're patient and you wait your moment, and when you finally get a chance, an opportunity at that moment, things sometimes don't always go as planned. So, Coach D'Antonio, as you heard, it's going to be an open battle right now. I mean, if you look at the MSU depth chart, there are so many quote-unquote ors on this depth chart, specifically when you talk about the offense and specifically when you talk about that quarterback position. Mark D'Antonio made it a point today to let everyone know out there that this will be a competition between Tyler O'Connor, Damian Terry, and Brian Lewerke as to who will be the starting quarterback come game time this Saturday afternoon at Spartan Stadium against Northwestern. And how is he going to judge who is going to be the guy to suit up, at least start against the Wildcats? Well, it's going to be how you perform in practice. Now, the Spartans have yet to hit the practice field just yet, all right? They haven't had a taste of football since leaving the field with a bad taste in their mouth against BYU on Saturday evening. So they will get, you know, pretty soon here, they will get back on the practice field, and D'Antonio is going to take a very, and I do mean very, close look at his team, okay? Further, I guess, pushing along this conversation, here's D'Antonio further elaborating on the quarterback position.
You know, we don't want to have a quarterback controversy, but we need to have more production. That's what's led to this. I need to throw the ball down the field more effectively. That's play calling, and that's execution, and that's route running and things of that nature. Number six needs to remain healthy and demonstrate consistency. And then Brian Lewerke is a young guy with a lot of talent, but he may not quite have the experience that the other guys do. But I think to exclude him from this right now would be wrong. So that's the case in point. But we'll see how it all shakes out. What we'll do at the end of all this is we'll be able to sit there and say whoever we put out on the field, that's who the guy is. We've reassessed ourselves. We've self-scouted ourselves. We've looked at things and said, this is this guy's fault. This is this guy's fault. I'm not talking about the quarterback. I'm talking about other people. This could have been handled. And we look at all the different aspects of it and try and make the best decision we can.
You know, there was one phrase that really stood out throughout Mark D'Antonio's press conference this morning. And the phrase that I kept hearing over and over and over is all-inclusive, okay? This is an all-inclusive, shared responsibility of dropping the ball so far this year for the Michigan State football team, okay? And Mark D'Antonio, as the head coach of this football team, that's what you're supposed to say. Simple as that, okay? And he also made it a point that, yeah, it may be an all-inclusive, shared responsibility blunder from all of us. I am the guy that takes full responsibility for what has gone wrong so far this year. And you can't point the finger here, folks, to say this guy is the reason why Michigan State has so far failed to meet expectations. Again, it's all inclusive. You really can't point the finger at one person, or heck, even two people, to say this is why Michigan State is not getting the job done here. Multiple areas, folks. MSU defense hasn't been great. The offense has failed to make big plays and failed to have a consistent run week after week after week. The play calling has been suspect, and that's why that adds some spice to the conversation when talking about the quarterback quandary now. Because Mark D'Antonio, he pulled Tyler O'Connor late in that game against BYU. I didn't think it was just because I thought that the play calling could have been better to allow Tyler O'Connor to give him a chance to flourish in the system? You know, it makes no sense that on that first scoring drive for Michigan State, Tyler O'Connor throws the football 8 times. The rest of that half, he only threw the football once more. Didn't understand it. I mean, again, there was a point in that game where Michigan State had run the ball 8 straight times. Share responsibility here, folks. Play calling could have been better. The MSU defense could have been better. And again, when it comes to defense, they're riddled with a lot of injuries right now. And I give a lot of credit to Harlan Barnett because I think when you look at that depth chart for the MSU defense and all the injuries that they've gone through, I mean, heck, a lot of guys stepped up on Saturday, I must say, folks. And heck, losing Riley Bulla, when you lose a man who plays that position, that middle linebacker position like Riley Bulla does, he's so vocal. He is the leader of that defense. When you lose a man of that magnitude, it's tough to tread water. I must say that. I want to go through the depth chart really briefly here before I bring in Isaac Constance, our engineer of WKAR's Current Sports, because I mentioned how there are a ton of oars on that depth chart going into this game against Northwestern. First off, when it comes to the wideouts here, Monty Medeiros, yeah, he's good. Felton Davis, fine. Then you have an oar next to Darrell Stewart Jr. and or Edward Barksdale, the third. Moving along here, you talk about the center position. It has listed Benny McGowan or Brian Allen. Right guard position, Brian Allen or Benny McGowan. So they're both competing. You know, someone's going to start out of Benny McGowan and Brian Allen at either center or right guard. I think that's safe to say, right? Tight end, Josiah Price or Jamal Lyles. Okay. Moving along here, you also have an or next to the name of Tristan Jackson or Matt Maksud. And then, of course, the quarterback position, Tyler O'Connor or Damian Terry or Brian Lewerke. Safe to say that Messiah DeWeaver isn't in this conversation right now. Messiah is a freshman. He's got plenty of room for growth here, all right? But D'Antonio made it a point to say that excluding Brian Lewerke from this conversation, you know, and Brian Lewerke is a guy who we did see late in that game against Wisconsin. You know, a lot of people forget that. You know, even though we did see Damian Terry, the latest backup quarterback to see some playing action against BYU, Brian Lewerke, it wasn't too long ago before we, you know, until we saw him on the field. So it's going to be, you know, between Tyler O'Connor, Damian Terry, and Brian Lewerke here. Moving along here, at fullback, you have Prescott Line or Delton Williams. And then at tailback, you have LJ Scott or Gerald Holmes or Madre London. A ton of oars on the offensive side of the football for Michigan State. When it comes to the defensive depth, you know how many oars there are? None. Isaac Constance, current sports engineer, what do you make of what Coach D had to say concerning who will be behind center come homecoming game against Northwestern?
I didn't think it was too controversial. I thought it was a nice, safe, classic Coach T press conference answer, and that he said basically whoever plays better in practice and is the better fit with this team will start at quarterback. Yeah, I kind of figured that out. But I think Tyler O'Connor is clearly the best quarterback on this team when it comes to practices. It's just about turning it into game time action. And that's where the problem lies for this team, because Tyler O'Connor, he was hyped up before this season. The coaches weren't shy about letting it be known, this is our guy, this is our captain. We expect a lot from Tyler O'Connor, and he obviously hasn't lived up to that. Say what you will about the play calling or whatever it might be, but Tyler O'Connor's play itself has been disappointing too. Now, if you didn't make the point about all the oars on the offensive depth chart and the lack, the zero oars on the defensive depth chart, I would have made the same thing, because there's a rational explanation for that, and that's injuries. Mm-hmm. That's just injury, certainly, injury, injury on the defensive end. And the thing is, when I look at this defense, not only are they missing talent in the linebacker position, which you and I both targeted as MSU's possibly best position, offense, defense, special teams, heading into this season, and it's suddenly become one of the biggest vacancies where they could really use some more talent. But Ed Davis as well is not even listed as a starter despite all of these injuries. I really feel terrible for him, you know, coming off a really devastating injury like he suffered with ACL. It's hard to return full strength. He hasn't. And this defense now is just struggling to try to fill in and plug in the gaps, because you and I both brought it up after the BYU game. It's not a matter of who starts. It's not that the starters are terrible or anything like that. It's that the backups came into this year probably thinking, okay, I'm the fourth or fifth string. Mm-hmm. Suddenly they're the second string. Suddenly they're playing 20 snaps a game. And that's a lot to thrust on a player who maybe doesn't have the experience or maybe just doesn't have the ability to play that amount of playing time.
Totally agree with you. And yeah, when it comes, and going back to your point about Ed Davis, I mean, you really got a feel for this guy. This is a guy who went through so much and trying to get a 6-year of eligibility. It came, you know, after the season had already even begun. He's been trying to get his feet wet and get that experience, just has not been able to really get into a rhythm. And he's listed on the depth chart, second behind Chris Fry at the Sam linebacker position. I do think we will see Ed Davis maybe for a few plays here and there against Northwestern, but nothing elongated, if you ask me. Going back to the play calling, the point I made about the play calling, because the play calling has been criticized. Mark D'Antonio was asked today whether or not he's going to be more involved this week when it comes to sitting in on meetings to try and figure out where in the world is the play calling going awry and whether or not we will see Mark D'Antonio take over the play calling offensively for this team moving forward. And here is what he had to say.
You know, I'm involved, but on game day, you need to separate yourself as a play caller a little bit from all the craziness that's going on in the world or on the sideline or in the game. You need to stay focused. From my perspective, you need to stay focused. When I called the game defensively, you need to stay focused on the task at hand and look for the next play and look to try and make things systematically and make as fast as probably the most important thing is making the call as quick as you can to let it digest in people's minds. And that's not easy to do. So you got a 40-second clock, and sometimes it's a 25-second clock. Well, you got about 10 seconds to make the call. So that's the way we've done it here. That's the way we'll continue to do it. Have faith in what's going on, and we'll get it fixed. But it's execution as well. Every play is designed to work. Every defense is designed to work. If you want me to go back through why we're not succeeding, it's not just on the offensive side of the ball. That's for sure. It's not just play calling. That's for sure. There are things in other areas, and that's the case with most football teams. You got to concentrate on how to fix things that are not going quite right for you, which has always been the case. We're 13-1, 12-2. We got things not working right. We've got to fix them.
You know what I really took away from Coach D's press conference this morning as well, Isaac, is that Coach D isn't panicking right now. He approached that podium with a very calm and reassuring demeanor while also reiterating that, yeah, we got major problems right now that we need to figure out and iron out before we hit the football, field next against whoever we play. He was very calm. He was very reassuring. He was also even a bit humorous. I mean, he joked about the or a lot, throughout the presser. And he was like, hey, it's good that you guys are laughing out there. So, Coach D is a guy who, one thing I admire about him is that he does not lose his cool.
Never.
Very often. And he's so focused on the sidelines. I love him because he's a guy who demands respect anytime you see him, but he's also very approachable. And at the same time, he's very loyal. He did not leave his guys out to dry, i.e. a Charlie Strong. You know what I mean? He didn't abandon shit with his coaching staff. He didn't call out Dave Warner or Jim Bowman or Harlan Barnett. He didn't put those guys out on the island. He said, you know what? This is shared responsibility. This is all inclusive. And heck, a lot of it has to do with me because I am the head coach of this football team, which I absolutely love. He is not going to take over the play calling. He still has tremendous faith in a guy in Dave Warner and a guy in Jim Bowman, two guys who led an offense to the college football playoff last year. So it's important to keep that in perspective and not live too much in the moment, because the track record does speak for itself. And I think so many sports fans out there, so many Michigan State football fans out there have become so spoiled and are so reactionary to what's happening in the now that a lot of them have jumped ship.
Exactly. You can't be myopic. Yeah, you got to remember what happened in the past, what these guys did for you in years before. And that's an example of what MSU did last year against Ohio State when Tyler O'Connor had to fit in.
Certainly.
And the play calling perfectly fit around his needs for his first game ever as a starting college football quarterback. This is an offense that can adapt, will have to adapt. And you know what? If in 2 years you and I are having the same discussion, then it's time to start asking some questions about whether these guys belong on the staff any longer. But it hasn't been. It's been 5 games this season. Mm-hmm. So let's all cool down. This is a rebuilding year for MSU. You accept that fact, you live with it, and you live another day.
And as far as the Michigan State football fans are concerned, Michigan State's own Mark D'Antonio has a message to you.
Well, I guess my message to our fans is we're working. We're going to be strong. Be strong. Stay the course. Either you're Spartan fans, you're Spartan fans. If you want to jump off the bandwagon a little bit, I understand a little bit, because people are fickle. Success is fickle. But I think that we've built some equity around here, hopefully. We've done it right. We've done it the right way. And I think we've done it in a positive fashion and with class. So whatever comes down the pipe, I can handle those things. And, I'll take the brunt of that, and I'd like to shield our football team from it as much as I can.
All right, you fickle fans, we got to move on. But before we do, I want to give a big shout-out. I wanted to bring our current sports production assistant, Luke Robbins, into the studio, Isaac, because he really wanted to talk about the Lions. We have yet to get to the Lions just yet. Wanted to do it in the first segment, but you see how that went. We're up to the first break now, but I want to give him a huge shout out because, again, I have this superstitious thing. You know this, Isaac, that I cannot do a show without my coffee and a banana. I don't have my banana, but I do have my coffee. Thanks in part to Mr. Luke Robbins, who went down to Sparty's and got me a coffee. So, Luke, we didn't get to chat. Give him a round of applause, right? We didn't get a chance to chat about your Lions. We will later on in the show. But, Luke, thank you so much, brother, all right?
You're welcome. It was a pleasure.
You got it. All right, let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will chat with a Michigan legend, folks, Mr. Bob Apiza, 2-time All-American for the Michigan State football team back in the 60s, and director of Men of Sparta. Find out what that is in just a second. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports.
So my kid brother's high school class is beginning to think about college. Sure, I'll be glad to help you prepare a report on Michigan State.
Timetable, 1965. Civil rights, a Vietnam conflict, JFK assassination. America was on fire. Youth were out in full force on college campuses, and Michigan State University was no exception. In East Lansing, Michigan, football was a way of life, and Spartan head coach Duffy Daugherty understood the power he held to define the culture at MSU. Duffy knew the way the world was heading and decided to be a pioneer. He gave black players from the South and players from Hawaii an opportunity to play Division I football, and recruited the first fully integrated team in its 95-year history, a team that would rise to be the greatest in the nation. In 1966, the undefeated Spartans played their rival 8-0 Notre Dame, that will later be dubbed the game of the century. 33 million fans tuned in to watch the riveting clash of culture, a metaphor for the racial issues of the day.
Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. All right, folks, let's get to our guest for today's Current Sports. He has just walked through our doors, and it is truly an honor to have him a part of our show. He is a 2-time All-American for the Michigan State football team back in 1965 and 1966, and the first Samoan to be selected first team All-American. Also voted as the ninth best running back of the past 50 years by Michigan State fans and the only fullback on that list. And he is also the director of Men of Sparta, which you will hear more about in just a second. It is truly my pleasure to welcome Bob Pisa to WKAR's Current Sports. Bob, how are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you, Al. It's a privilege. It's really an honor to be here and to say hello to all our Spartan fans out there. Hello, aloha.
I gotta love that. And Bob, you know what? It's so cool because this week, as I mentioned in our first segment, this week is homecoming weekend. And it's so cool because you have all of these Spartan alum that have been away in their respective careers and doing other things since graduation, coming back to the area like yourself. I mean, what's it like for you whenever you return to East Lansing?
When I return, whenever I come back, this is home. This is home away from home for me. When I came out of Honolulu, I had to make the adjustment to East Lansing, and I built lifelong networks of friends, people that I've admired, respect. Some of the people who are still here, some have gone, but the fact of the matter is that I have a great memory bank of these people, and the activities that we are involved with this week just revitalized the entire the feeling of being back on campus.
What are some of the most vivid memories that return when you step on this campus, Bob?
Well, you know, it's funny because the young generation nowadays, they go into buildings like the Duffy Doherty Building.
Right.
They go into buildings like the Jack Breslin Center or the Biggie Munn Arena or the John Hanna Administration Building. I, along with some of my teammates, or a lot of my teammates, sat with these people, ate lunch with them, rode buses with them, went on train rides with them, went on plane rides with them, whether we go down to Lafayette or South Bend or whatever it may be. The fact is, it's so surreal for me to come back and see these iconic names that buildings and facilities are named after. And I always have this feeling that, you know, I'm privileged to be amongst greats. They taught me the lessons of life coming out of Hawaii because I originated out of American Samoa. Mm-hmm. I couldn't speak a word of English.
Wow.
And at 1952, when I arrived from American Samoa, I couldn't speak a word of English and never seen electricity.
Really?
Never seen lights? Never seen lights.
Oh, my goodness.
And I remember telling my brother, George, on top of the ship as we were coming into Honolulu Harbor, and I see this crescendo and this horizon of lights. And the only thing I lived under at that time were kerosene lanterns in the evenings. And that's what I equated with light. And I remember telling my brother George in Samoan, because I couldn't speak a word of English, and I told him, I said, you know, George, there's Siosi, that's George in Samoan. Mm-hmm. I said, there must be hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of kerosene lanterns out there.
Wow, and you had no idea there were
none.
Lights.
And then he corrected me. He says, Papu, that's my name in Samoan, Bob, Papu. He says, those are not kerosene lanterns. That's electricity. So for the first time in a young man's life, in 1952, Thomas Edison entered my life. And now you fast forward that to 1965, 13 years later, I'm playing with the top team in the country, Michigan State University. So throughout that time period, in those 13 years, I've had to acquire a lot of cognitive skills, social etiquette, protocol, demeanors, decorum, and things of that nature, mm-hmm. let alone learn English and try to pass the SAT and ACT exam in order for me to qualify here. But that's a struggle that I can come with, I can talk about, and it's in my memory bank, and I'm grateful because, as I mentioned previously, Michigan State helped mold us as players become men.
Certainly. And how old were you when you made that trip and finally saw electricity for the first time? How old were you at that time, Bob?
I was six and a half.
6.5 years
yes,
old.
Yes, sir.
How tough was that adjustment to American culture?
It was quite an adjustment because I remember sitting at a classroom at Pearl Harbor Elementary, and the teacher would gather the students around together and we'll sit in front of her, and she would read a book, you know, See Jane Run, 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 or See Tom Hop, 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 Hop. And when she hits the funny line and the students would respond with a lot of laughter, I laughed with them because I wanted to feel that I belonged, not knowing what they were talking about.
Right.
So it was a struggle. It was a struggle.
Now, Bob, can you take us back to the 60s? And I want to know, what was that time like culturally and politically for America? And specifically where you were, you know, because Honolulu, Hawaii,
sure.
Right? What was that time in the 60s like?
It was a time of reevaluating our country.
Right.
It was a time where we reevaluated who we were as a people. And I know coming out of a mixed cosmopolitan ethnic population in the state of Hawaii, coming here, we knew, we heard bits and pieces about Martin Luther King, civil rights, the Vietnam conflict, things of that nature. But we were somewhat sheltered by that. But when I arrived on campus, I got the first dosage of that.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we were in an era where it was, Jim Crow prevailed. And we played it down because we knew, although there were Caucasian players from the South and African-American players from the South as well, or from the North, congregating together. And those of us who came from the islands, I, along with Dick Kenny and Charlie Widemar, we're the tweeners, you know. We weren't black, we weren't white, we were brown.
Mm-hmm.
But we were people of color, and we didn't. And Duffy, and this is the thing I give a lot of credit to Coach Duffy Doherty. He didn't see color. He just saw talent. He saw people. And he treated everybody equally. And that's the one remaining memory I have about that man. He was like a father figure to all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he treated everybody equal. And if you're offered an opportunity to play for Michigan State, this is an opportunity that you have to bring something to the table when you come here. So we had a lot of talent, but talent that were willing to shore up, people that were willing to step up. And at that moment in time, we knew that we had to step up, we had to measure up, and we had to man up to a lot of the different challenges of life, not only on the field, but as well as in the classroom.
Bob, of course, it's well documented about the racial unrest that took place in the 1960s, especially when it comes to the African-American demographic. But in what way was it similar and different in Hawaii compared to that of the American South in the 60s?
Well, I have to hearken back to what I just said about a cosmopolitan.
Right.
Constituents. So we had mixtures of Polynesians, Asians, whites, as well as military African Americans that were at Pearl Harbor or stationed over Schofield Barracks. So we weren't isolated from that because we knew that we were going to work together, and that's basically the mindset that we brought when we got here. If there's a will, there's a way to work things together. I know some of my counterparts or some of my former teammates coming out of Fort Worth, Texas, knowing that they've never played with people of color because all they saw were colored bathrooms, colored and white bathrooms, so forth and so forth, and vice versa. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So we got together in spite of what we had been force-fed throughout our younger lives growing up. We knew that there was a better world. We knew that in order for us to be successful, we have to coalesce as a team and accept the differences that we have. We had differences, no doubt. But if you respect the differences amongst each other and you agree to disagree, I'm good with that.
Folks, if you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are chatting with Bob Apiza, two-time All-American for the Michigan State football team back in 1965 and 66, and director of Men of Sparta. Before we dive into your inspiration behind Men of Sparta, Bob, what was your recruitment like? How did you end up here at Michigan State playing football for Duffy?
Well, I had the privilege of having 42 full rides offered, extended to me at that time. And it was
42?
42.
Oh, you were pretty good.
Well, it was luck. It was luck because I think a lot of it, you know, social media was not as abundant as you have today back in those days. And at that time, telecommunication was not the snuff. Mm-hmm. We were behind in time. We weren't even in the 20th century.
Right,
because everything else was shown a week later, but through people who saw those of us who played, were sending clippings across the ocean, and I had 42 offers. But the fact is, you know, I can only select one, and I narrowed it down to Penn State, Michigan State, and the SC Trojans. Mm-hmm. And my mom wanted me to go to the West Coast to play for USC because it's closer to home.
Right.
Penn State did not belong in the conference at that time. They were an independent school. And I wanted to play as young as I could when I was a young man. I remember I wanted to play in the granddaddy of them all, the Rose Bowl.
Exactly.
And the Big Ten was the only team that would, the only conference that invitation was extended to, as well as the Pacific 8, Pac 8 at that time, which SC was involved with.
Right.
So that was how that came about. But the fact is, you know, for the circumstances, the gentleman who came to sign me on that day, a letter of intent, only one person was there, and that was Michigan State. And I thought that SC had taken a different direction, but little did I know, and I found out later, that the gentleman, the assistant coach that flew in from L.A., forgot there was a three-hour time difference, and he had missed his flight.
Oh, wow.
And so when he was airborne, I had already committed to Michigan State, so the gentleman, Tommy Ka'ulukukui Sr., who is the scout for Michigan State there, called Duffy, and Duffy called John McKay, and that we've already annexed Bob Apiza on a contract. And from what I heard is that John McKay wasn't very happy because those two were competitors, mm-hmm. along with Bear Bryant and some of these people.
Certainly.
So when the coach arrived, and he was a little late, he called John McKay, and he said, Coach, you know, I missed what's going on, and Bob is already committed. He says, and John told him, I says, yeah, I know that. And then he says, well, when do you want me to come back? And his exact words that were told to me in later years is that, just take your time, because you're no longer employed here. He was fired right on the spot. Unfortunately, this was the way it evolved through the recruiting process back in those days in the mid-60s or early 60s.
Cutthroat. I mean, missed his flight. You know, yeah. You end up committed to Michigan State.
Yeah.
He misses his opportunity to try and recruit you.
Right.
And now he doesn't have a job. What a story.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Unbelievable, Bob.
It's really, really sad.
What stood out to you about Duffy? Because, I mean, when you look at, and again, I don't know if you guys realized how progressive he was in his thinking by not deciding to look at color and just look at talent and integrate, you know, African-Americans, you know, Samoans, along with Caucasians. Did you guys at the time realize how against the grain, quote unquote, this thinking was?
No, we weren't. We did not know that, only because we were, you know, again, we were insulated, mm-hmm. but we weren't isolated, okay? And that's the point. That's the point. I know that there were misgivings from the peripheral, the exterior, but that did not concern Duffy at all. Matter of fact, there's a story where he lost a friend over the fact that he had questioned whether an African American quarterback was going to lead the Spartans the following year.
And Jimmy Ray.
And so that annoyed Duffy so much that he and Francine, his wife at that time, this was told to me by his son Danny, mm-hmm. when he came home, he says, "We're no longer friends," because he felt compelled to step up for his guys, and he don't question it. My choices of who I'm going to lead, because although you may be a booster, a very important person to the grid as far as Michigan State's concerned, mm-hmm. it doesn't make any difference to me. If you feel that way about certain players, I don't want you to call it to make sure that you're pleased with the people that I put in certain spots.
And that speaks directly to character, of course. And he exactly. was certainly a man of character, without
exactly.
a doubt.
Exactly.
Bob, I want to talk about Men of Sparta. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, this film, or documentary, I should say, will be premiered on campus at Wells Hall Thursday, 6 p.m., doors open at 5 p.m. Where did the inspiration come from to produce a piece of work like this? And what was the grunt work like? I mean, because there had to be a lot of time and care into putting something together like this.
Well, as people on my team know, that there are only two of us that were in the filming industry, I along with Bubba Smith. Mm-hmm. But I had started, I was in it for 33 years, and I retired about a little over 10 years ago. And in 2006, we had a reunion of our national championship team up here when they played Notre Dame at the stadium. And I remember being up at the press box and George Webster, Mickey. That's his nickname. Everybody had a nickname. Okay.
right.
Mickey is he motioned to me because he was sitting in a wheelchair. He had both of his legs amputated at that time because
oh, wow.
of a blood disorder. And George is the greatest football player in the history of Michigan State, as voted by the fans and the media. And Mickey called me over. He said, "Bob, you know, I know I'm not going to be around much longer, because we've already started losing guys. I need for you to tell this story, because I know Bubba is not going to be inclined to do that, and he has his own health issues." So, and I gave it a thought, and I said, "Okay, George, let me give it some thought." 7 months later, he passes, and that really stuck to me, because I was busy doing other things in my life that. And that entailed and it involved filming and just following up on certain projects. But when Bubba Smith passed about 5 years ago, Robert Biney and I, along with a couple of my former teammates, Gene Washington and Ernie Pasher was there, as Clint Jones, and we were all in, and Jimmy Ray as well. And we attended his funeral, and Robert took me aside and said, "You better tell this story. You got to tell this story, because more of us are going to be going at some point in time. And you've got offsprings of these men, mm-hmm. and their offsprings, their siblings need to be given credit for the activity or their participation in our team." And so I took it upon myself. For 5 years, I put out my through my own investments. I did a lot of traveling back and forth. So, I invested a little substantial amount, but it's no big thing, because I was doing it for the labor of love.
Exactly. Because it's bigger than just
exactly.
what's coming out your pocket,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. And I've gotten some help from people in the past year, which I'm grateful for. But I wanted to make sure the story is told so that the people who were there at that time, from the administration, as well as the student bodies, because they gave us the unconditional support. Roy Simon, who was the husband of Luana Simon, was a very, very good friend of mine. And he worked over at the Kellogg Center at that time. Mm-hmm. That's how we hooked up, because we stayed at Kellogg Center. And so he knew of the trials and tribulations of putting together a documentary. I could not afford to fly all over the country to interview guys. So I had to wait and pick my spots. When we get together for a reunion or get together for a ceremony or something, I'll have about five or six guys lined up, and we'll sit down and
talk. Work and play during those moments.
Yeah, and talk, exactly.
Now, you've shown the film around Michigan a few times. And again, this Thursday, Wells Hall, 6 p.m., it will be shown there. Ticket prices for that, Bob?
It's $12.50. We will have DVDs available for sale at the door. Along with Jimmy Ray, he'll have his book, Ray of Light. Mm-hmm. And I think, Jim Probst also has a book about, CTE and things like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Yeah, we had Jim on the show not too long ago. Yeah,
he's a great, great guy. Great help. So we will be there. But it tells that story about the legacy of those two teams. And tickets will go on sale by 5 o'clock. That day, because the showing starts at 6, mm-hmm. but we will also have it on sale tomorrow night at the Wharton Center for the, I think it's the Game of the Century discussion that we have, and I think we have a couple of gentlemen from Notre Dame that will be aboard as well, George Gedeke, and I think Coley O'Brien, who was the quarterback that threw that touchdown.
How about that? Yeah. And Jimmy Ray will be in town as
Jimmy
well, right?
Jimmy Ray will be there.
We actually will have Jimmy Ray and author Tom Shanahan
That's
in our
correct.
Studio on tomorrow's Current Sports,
That's
so I'm really looking forward to that. We only have a few more minutes here, 3 minutes left here in the show, Bob, but when people watch Men of Sparta, what do you want them to take away?
I want them to take away the feeling, and this happened for some reason, up at the Traverse City Film Commission, on the film festival that we entered.
Exactly.
It was sold out. Michael Moore rant and raved about it. It was the best historical picture for the program. But I want them to take away the feeling that you were there, that without a history, you don't have a presence and you don't have a future. You need a history that we can document as well as measure up to. The last two numbers are at the stadium, 65 and 66. I would like to see another number up there. And I firmly believe with all my heart that Mark D'Antonio is the man to do that. I'm a great fan of his. I know people have some reservations because we've lost a couple of games here and there. But look. Ladies and gentlemen, 65-66, we took the national title. In 67, my senior year, we ended up with a 3-7 record. So there's attrition that you have to take into consideration. People getting injured, people dropping out of school, people leaving and now it's more so with people, young great ball players leaving for the pros, mm-hmm. and you need that continuity. And it's a tough job. It's a tough job to have that continuity as far as Mark D'Antoni is concerned, Coach Bowman, Warner, or Barnett. I give them the greatest respect. Our program is on sound footing. Do not worry. We are on sound footing. We may take a little time to juggle a couple of things here. But Mark D'Antonio will bring it back in the right form.
I couldn't agree more. Folks, we have been chatting with Bob Apiza, two-time All-American for the Michigan State football team back in 1965 and 1966, and director of Men of Sparta, which you can check out on this campus Thursday at Wells Hall at 6 p.m. Bob, it was certainly a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us here on Current Sports.
I'm privileged. Thank you very much, Al.
All right, folks, we are out of time, but we'll be back at it same time, same place tomorrow, where we invite Jimmy Ray, the great Jimmy Ray, as well as author Tom Shanahan, live in our studio. Thanks so much to Bob Apiza and to all of you out there for tuning in to this edition of Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care and be easy, people.